Let's get started. Good evening, everyone. We've had a few folks join us, and we're so glad that you're here with us for the Answers in Energy Speaker Series. We have an absolutely fabulous speaker this evening, Ambassador Irene Geiner-Reichel. She's also the president of the Global Forum on Sustainable Energy, and this is our last Answers in Energy program for the year. We have definitely saved the best for last. As you know, the Answers in Energy series is dedicated to addressing issues of energy, natural resources, and environmental law, policy, here in the United States and worldwide. We're a part of the Tulsa Law School, particularly our Masters of Jurisprudence in Energy Law program. In fact, this program is a part of one of the formal classes called Thesis Laboratory. If you're attending this series live, you are actually in the University of Tulsa College of Law online classroom. You'll notice there are names of others that are here with you in the classroom. And if you like, you're more than welcome to type any questions that you might have in the chat box there. The ambassador will not be able to hear or see your questions because of the distance that we have. She's actually talking to you from Beijing, China tonight. And it's, however, tomorrow morning for her. So I think it's appropriate that we're asking about what the future of sustainable energy will be. But I'd like, in preface to this, just to give the ambassador the briefest and warmest introduction that we possibly can. Ambassador Reichel is a graduate of the University of Innsbruck in Austria and Fordham University, holding degrees in law, religion, and religious education, as well as German and French literature and linguistics. The ambassador worked as an assistant professor at the University of Innsbruck and then began her work in the diplomatic service in the 1980s. She worked tirelessly at various different embassies throughout places like Cairo, Egypt, at the United Nations, in New York, and various other places. And in 2012, accepted the appointment as the Austrian ambassador to the People's Republic of China and to Mongolia. Ambassador Reichel's work on energy development, particularly questions relating to sustainable energy for all, are widely hailed through her work on the Global Forum on Sustainable Energy. She has been a chairperson or advisory board member or convener of literally dozens of meetings, international and national meetings, on sustainable energy and sustainable development throughout our world. With that, Ambassador Reichel, we thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here on our Wednesday evening and your Thursday morning.
Well, thank you so much, Jason. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's very exciting for me to do this. I've never given a lecture via telephone to an audience on a different continent. So this is an absolute first, but I think it's a great way of connecting. It's a great way of sharing experiences. Thank you also for giving my background. There is not much I need to add to such a gracious presentation. I would perhaps just highlight the fact that I have focused a lot during my work around issues of economic and social development. Environmental issues were very high up on the agenda of my work, and sustainable development. All the issues related to sustainable development have really been my focus since I participated in the big conference of 1992. Called the United Nations Conference on Environment and Development, which, as many of you know, issued the Agenda 21 action program, which is still very influential today. energy was something I dealt with really since that conference in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. So let me very briefly say what I hope the thrust of my talk is going to be this morning here in Beijing and this evening for you in Tulsa. It's about governance, it's about global governance, it's about the quest for sustainable development and energy's role in it. Some of the most pressing questions of our times probably are, how do we move towards sustainable development? How do we ensure the provision of water, of food, of natural resources for a world population expected to peak around 9 billion people by mid-century? Now we stand at 7 billion, and in just less than 40 years, we will be 2. Hello?
Ambassador, we lost our phone connection.
Okay.
So
what are we doing?
We're fine. We're still in the classroom, and everyone's still here. I find it ironic that the most stable part of our technology, the telephone system, is what let us down. Ambassador, the last thing that we heard you talking about was the need for the world to consider how it is going to provide for the needs of 9 billion people at the mid-century point, and how food and energy and other services are going to be provided on an equitable basis. It was at that point that the line went silent.
Okay. So shall we start it from there?
If that works for you, that would be lovely.
Sure. So let me rephrase. The general thrust of my talk. We have the big challenges ahead of us to provide for some 9 billion people in terms of food, in terms of water, in terms of natural resources, in terms of other necessities for life. As we know it, for life as we understand it in the civilization of the 21st century, by the middle of this century, 9 billion people. And how do we balance economic growth with social justice? And how do we manage natural resources in a way that respects the Earth's carrying capacity? How do we take into consideration future generations' needs? And how does energy fit into this equation? I will structure my talk around three large substantive parts. The first part will be a bit historic. I will ask the question, well, how did we actually get energy onto the international agenda? The second part will be, where do we go from here? Taking it from the year 2012 into the future, what are avenues for energy governance, for international cooperation on energy issues to evolve regionally and globally? And then we're probably ready for taking a little break. And then we will look at the third substantive portion of my talk, which will be to discuss the post-2015 development agenda. So let's start with the historic part. The slow movement of energy onto the global agenda. I mentioned already that in 1992, when the international community came together for the very first time to discuss environmental issues and developmental issues in an integrated fashion at the conference in Rio de Janeiro called UNCED, United Nations Conference on Environment and Development, energy was not mentioned. Agenda 21 is the seminal action program that came out of this conference, but it does not contain provisions on energy. At the conference in 1992, the Climate Change Convention, the Biological Diversity Convention, were signed by many member states of the United Nations. And a political agreement was found to work on a convention to combat desertification. Now, obviously, all these three issues have a lot to do with energy, yet energy was not formally mentioned because it was a political no-go. There were groups of countries, the OPEC countries, but also Western countries like United Kingdom or United States, for that matter, who felt that discussing energy in a global setting might threaten their way of life, might force them to make changes domestically that at the time they were not ready to do. So the subject simply was not discussed. And this didn't get better for several years, even though in 1997, 5 years later, as a result of an Austrian initiative carried forward by the European Union, energy was at least put on the multi-year timetable of work of the Commission on Sustainable Development, and it was decided that energy should be discussed in the year 2001. Now, in the year 2000, the Millennium Declaration was approved by the General Assembly. The year 2000 was the change of the millennia, and the international community felt that it was appropriate to do something very meaningful, and they decided to adopt the Millennium Declaration, which was then supplemented by the Millennium Development Goals. And these Millennium Development Goals are very wonderful goals for social development and for the eradication of poverty around the world. And they, too, did not mention energy at all. In 2001, finally, the Commission on Sustainable Development discussed for the first time at the United Nations in a comprehensive and global fashion energy issues and agreed about some major points, one of them being that the current energy systems worldwide speaking are unsustainable. Why are they unsustainable? They are unsustainable because they deprive billions of people of modern energy services, because the per capita energy use is grossly inadequate, and there are huge divergences between the amounts of energy used in Western countries as opposed to African countries, Asian countries, etc. And finally, because the current energy systems put a very, very heavy burden on the environment, on the local environment, in terms of air pollution, something that we experience here very on a daily basis in Beijing and in other parts of China, but also, of course, because the current energy systems contribute to global warming, and global warming is currently looked at as one of the major threats to human civilization as we know it. Now, when we continue the big stepping stones of international cooperation of the third millennium, in the year 2000, the United Nations came together again, 2002, for the Joburg Summit, the summit in Johannesburg, South Africa. And that summit in South Africa again discussed sustainable development issues in a very comprehensive fashion. And energy featured in those discussions for the very first time also. Not in a very satisfactory way. Some of the countries had pushed for targets on renewable energy, had pushed for binding commitments on energy efficiency. That was not possible at this global conference in the year 2002. But what happened was that many coalitions formed, many smaller groupings emerged. Those groupings were called Type 2 partnerships. Type 1 would have been the binding commitments, which were elusive, but the Type 2 partnerships formed, and those were partnerships such as the GVEP, the Global Village Energy Partnership, or networks such as REAP, Renewable Energy and Energy Efficiency Partnership. When if you actually Google these names, you will find that the networks still exist and do very useful work around the world. And dozens of these networks and Type 2 partnerships sprang up. What also happened was that the United Nations started to organize itself in a more systematic fashion to deal with energy issues. You may know that there is no one organization that actually deals with energy issues in a comprehensive way in the UN system. We have a nuclear energy agency, the International Energy Agency, International Atomic Energy Agency, which is actually headquartered in Vienna, Austria. But there is no comprehensive energy organization in the UN system. So some 20 or so entities of the UN system have small energy mandates, often overlapping. And they form themselves into a coordination mechanism called UN Energy. Scientific work also became very important in the endeavor to move energy up on the international agenda. In the year 2000 already, the United Nations Development Program, the Department of Economic and Social Affairs of the UN, and the World Energy Council came together to edit a major scientific study which was called World Energy Assessment. That World Energy Assessment already showed in a very compelling way that all the major developmental problems of the world could only be addressed if energy systems were also becoming more sustainable. That there was no hope to combat the massive problems of poverty and environmental degradation that besieged the world without dealing with energy issues. In the year 2006, some of the scientists who had worked together already with the World Energy Assessment made another major attempt to rally the scientific community around energy issues in the service of sustainable development. And they formed a group to publish what became known as the Global Energy Assessment. And this was a major multi-year study. More than 200 authors from all countries around the world were involved in that study. And if you count the review authors, you have an even larger group of eminent persons working on this study. That global energy assessment was finally published in the year 2012. You can actually look it up and Google it under, or find it in the internet if you simply type in www.globalenergyassessment.org. It's a study to the tune of 1,800 pages published by Cambridge University Press as a hard copy, and it will answer all the questions that you ever wanted to ask about energy in the context of sustainable development and other pressing issues. Now, around that time, in the late 1990s, in the early years of the 21st century, regional cooperation also became more focused on energy issues. In particularly, the European Union, in its work with Africa, focused more on energy issues, and formed coalitions around strategic partnerships around energy that were consecrated, so to speak, at the big summit in between the European Union and the African states, for example, the Lisbon summit of the year 2007. The African EU Energy Partnership is still going strong today, and helped many African countries to integrate energy considerations more into their development strategies. The year 2010 also saw another very interesting development, and the year 2010 was the year in which IRENA formally came into being. IRENA is the International Renewable Energy Agency, and it's actually very remarkable that it was possible to form a new international organization around issues of renewable energy. The government of Germany needs to be credited for taking the initiative to bring about a coalition of interested countries that formed the start of this IRENA organization. The government of Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates, is to be credited for hosting IRENA. IRENA is actually the first international organization that is headquartered in a Gulf country, and I think it is significant, and it shows the commitment of these of the Gulf countries, which of course are known for their richness in oil and gas, to also look into a future where renewable energy will play a very important role. Now, it should also be said that many smaller platforms and many networks of interested stakeholders played a very important role to bring energy higher up on the international agenda. In the introduction, Jason did of myself, he mentioned the Global Forum on Sustainable Energy, the president of which I am currently, and it was way back in 1999 that we launched this Global Forum on Sustainable Energy in Vienna, Austria, in order to promote exchanges, informal networks, conferences around issues of energy and sustainable development. And over the years, we formed quite a constituency and network that reads into pretty much any energy-related administration around the world. And networks like that came together and helped build a consensus around the need to move on energy and sustainable development at the international level. Now, the movement happened in quite significant ways at major conferences that were held in Vienna in the year 2009, 2011, and 2013. We named these conferences Vienna Energy Forum. And around these conferences, an action agenda was formulated and goals were formulated that said, well, in order to make sustainable development for the world a reality, we need to do the following three things on energy as a matter of priority. First, we need to make sure that the 1.3 billion people around the world who currently do not have access to modern energy services, and the even larger number of people around the world who still cook with solid fuels, get access to modern energy services, get access to electricity, get access to proper cooking.
I'm so sorry. It seems like the telephone system just doesn't want to cooperate with us tonight.
Well, it doesn't matter. We'll take it from there. Yes. So a consensus started to emerge that three major actions were necessary to bring make sustainable development more of a reality. One was to work on renewable energy. The other one was to work on energy efficiency. And the third, and this is not an order of priorities, but all three are equally important, is to bring energy, modern energy services to those 1.3 billion people who don't have access to electricity and to the even larger number of people who still cook with solid fuels. So access to energy, action on improving energy efficiency, and action to increase the share of renewables in the overall energy mix were three goals around which the International Energy for Sustainable Development community converged. And the Secretary General of the United Nations took leadership of these issues, and in late 2011 launched an idea, an initiative that became known under the name Sustainable Energy for All. And Sustainable Energy for All had as its goal to make those three objectives that I mentioned before on access, on renewables, on energy efficiency a reality by 2030. A very ambitious agenda, but one that many scientists and many policymakers believed was one that could be achieved. So this is where we are now. The international community is able to support sustainable energy for all. It's an initiative that is driven by those stakeholders who want to support it. There is not a binding mandate from anybody, not from the General Assembly, even though the General Assembly blessed the initiative of the Secretary General took note with approval of his initiative, but it is not mandating any country to do anything. However, the General Assembly of the United Nations did declare the year 2012 as the year of sustainable energy for all, and it went even further. It declared the decade 2014 to 2024 as the decade for sustainable energy for all. And this is already a start, even though we have many decades and many international days, but they still serve to rally support around major ideas. This would now bring us to where we are now, and we could ask now, where do we go from here? But perhaps there are, in the meantime, I'm going to ask you, Jason, any questions that have come up while I've been talking, so I'd be happy to take them.
Yes, absolutely. One question that comes to mind, Ambassador, would be really, why wasn't energy mentioned in the Rio docs originally back in 92? Was it overlooked? Was the question controversial, or just had the thinking not gotten there at that point?
The connection is very bad. I can barely hear what you're saying. It's all hacked.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Ambassador, can you hear me better now?
Not really very well, no.
Okay. We can hear you great.
Okay, then I will just continue.
Okay. Huh? All right.
Yeah. Then I will just continue.
Thank you.
So let's ask the question, where do we go from here? And I think there are two really nice avenues. The one avenue is regional cooperation. In particular, in the African countries, regional cooperation has been recognized as a promising avenue. Now, you have to imagine that in sub-Saharan Africa, there are very weak institutions in the energy field. Ministries for energy and mineral resources do exist, but usually are staffed with very few people. Statistics are not really there. You don't have any good legal frameworks. Feed-in tariffs for renewable energy don't exist by and large. There are no standards for energy efficiency, etc. And all the countries, all the African countries south of the Sahara, are beset by very similar conditions of weak institutions, poor statistics, etc. So rather than having to invent the wheel, each country one by one, they decided to do it on a regional basis. And the first such institution was started actually with the help of the international organization UNIDO, United Nations Industrial Development Organization, and the Austrian and the Spanish and a few other governments for the Western African countries. And it's called ICRI, ECOWAS Center on Renewable Energy and Energy Efficiency. ECOWAS is the acronym for the grouping of Western African countries that work together under this name. ECRI has started operations in the year 2010. It's headquartered in Praia, in Cape Verde, and it has managed by now to support the elaboration of several regional policies on energy efficiency, on renewable energy, on small-scale hydro development, on bioenergy. And this is, I think, very significant because it helps the many members of of ECOWAS to form a regional market, and regional markets obviously are much more suited for attracting investments and working in a more business-oriented manner to overcome the energy poverty that is very, very severe in those countries of Western Africa, where you have access to electricity rates in the rural areas below 10% of the population, you know, which means that 90% of the population doesn't have access to electricity in the rural areas. This institution created for the ECOWAS region was so successful that the Eastern African region and the Southern African regions are now emulating this formula and are setting up similar centers. And similar regional endeavors are taking place in the Pacific and in the Caribbean, where large numbers of small island states are grappling with issues of energy poverty as well. So this seems to be a formula that works quite well. The second very interesting avenue to take energy and sustainable development forward is the initiative that I mentioned of the Secretary General, Sustainable Energy for All. Sustainable Energy for All is a coalition of the willing, and it is a multi-stakeholder coalition, which means that governments, international institutions, but also private sector entities, the media, academia, civil society organizations participate and contribute to the goals of the organization. Organization actually is the wrong word that I used just now. I should say the goals of the initiative. The initiative at this point is in search of an institutional form, of a legal institutional form, because the international system knows international organizations, or it knows non-governmental organizations, or you have a trust fund, but this loose coalition of many different entities simply bound together by the desire to promote three objectives on access, on energy efficiency, and on renewables is something that cannot really operate under international law very effectively. So currently there is a search for an institutional form still going on. But at the Rio Plus 20 conference in Rio de Janeiro in the year 2012, the Secretary General of the United Nations could already announce that more than 100 commitments were made by various partners of Sustainable Energy for All. And those more than 100 commitments on sustainable energy for all amount to over $50 billion and were formulated by governments, private sector corporations, small and medium-sized scale enterprises, financial institutions, donors, and development banks, and by non-governmental organizations, artists, academia, and individuals. So there is solid support for sustainable energy for all, and the elements of a structure are also in place already. There is a global facilitation team that is headquartered in Vienna, Austria. Sustainable energy for all is led by Kande Yumkeller. Kande Yumkeller is a national of Sierra Leone. So he knows what he's talking about when he's talking about energy poverty, because his mother still lives in a village where there is no electricity. And he is a very known person in sustainable development circles. He used to be the director general of UNIDO for several years and has worked really tirelessly to promote energy and sustainable development. The global facilitation team is in place. It for Sustainable Energy for All. It is headquartered in Vienna, Austria. The Austrian government offers hospitality to this global facilitation team. And more than 80 countries, more than 80 developing countries have opted into Sustainable Energy for All and want to work with the initiative and profit from the initiative. The steps that Sustainable Energy for All is taking is to work with individual countries on access issues, develop access strategies that help the governments concerned to make a proper analysis of the needs, the energy needs they have, of the energy potentials that they have, and then helps to link up these countries with international institutions, with other members of the Sustainable Energy for All network that can help overcome difficulties in the search for access solutions for these countries. One of the next steps will be to develop investment prospectuses, and that will make it possible then for Sustainable Energy for All to draw also on the considerable support from the private sector. It is very clear that the objectives of Sustainable Energy for All cannot be attained without very, very close collaboration with the private sector. The energy needs of the world and the transformations that are necessary to bring about the three objectives of Sustainable Energy for All are such that they can never be financed with public money, with development aid or with other sorts of public money. So unless private sector discovers these areas as investment opportunities, it will not be feasible to achieve the goals that we have set, that we have set for ourselves. Therefore, Sustainable Energy Fund is also identifying so-called high-impact opportunities where coalitions of private sector actors can come together and work on various issues, let's say in the building sector. The building sector, there are huge opportunities to improve energy efficiency in all countries of the world. And other possibilities to influence the movement towards more sustainable energy systems would be in the transport sector or in the industrial sector. So in all these areas, high impact opportunities are identified, and Sustainable Energy for All will help to provide framework conditions so that individual companies, individual stakeholders can come into the game and contribute in a more effective way. Now, it is very important to emphasize that the three goals of Sustainable Energy for All pertain to all countries. Obviously, access issues will be pressing in poorer developed countries. Africa, Sahara is mentioned already, in Southeast Asian countries. But also there are pockets of energy poverty in other parts of the world. But the two other goals, renewable energy and energy efficiency, these goals need to be also very, very, very with great attention in so-called developed. Also, the countries need to make much greater strides to improve the percentage or the, to improve efficiency and to the percentage of renewables in the overall energy mix of their countries and use. And this is probably a very exciting element that not for developing countries, it's for the entire world. And the entire world needs to come together and work together on the three overarching goals of sustainable energy for all. And this probably actually brings me to the last part of my talk, which is about the post 2015 development paradigm. Hello?
Hi there. It was a struggle to get a line, but we've got one now. I'm so glad we did, too, because we're really getting to the part that I really wanted to hear you talk about, the post-millennium development goal issues. So thank you for talking about this.
Yes, I will do that. And, you know, since the transmission difficulties are probably a bit bigger than we expected, what I can also do, I can send you a paper that I did recently in some other context, which you can make available to the students and to the alumni, where all the quotations and all the websites are, so that they can actually, if they're interested, look up some of the things that I mentioned.
Thank you so much. That's very kind, and we'll take you up on that.
Yeah. So let's look at the post 2015 development paradigm. We are used in international relations to work with the developing countries and to basically help them improve their situation. And by doing that, we used to use different conceptual frameworks. The most important conceptual framework over the last 15 years were the so-called Millennium Development Goals. And those were goals related to cutting extreme poverty, reducing the number of people suffering from hunger, overcoming severe malnutrition, overcoming illiteracy, fighting some of the most menacing diseases, etc. And by and large, these were goals that were to be reached in the developing countries. Of course, there was also Goal 8 of the Millennium Development Goals, which was about a global compact, between the so-called developed and the developing countries, and with the goal of reaching the other Millennium Development Goals in developing countries. Now, the understanding has shifted a bit, and the international community has come to the understanding that the world is really one. We live in one world, and therefore, it doesn't make sense to have development paradigms that are different for the developing countries and the developed countries. The understanding is that we need to find one development paradigm that allows all the 9 billion people on the planet to live together in a decent way, and to share the resources in a different in a different way as we have in the past. So at the Rio Plus 20 conference in 2012, the international community agreed that the framework guiding international cooperation beyond 2015 should be one rooted in sustainable development. The framework should be applicable to all countries, reflecting the insight that we share one Earth and that groups of countries cannot continue to develop to the detriment of others. It should take into consideration the different levels of development, and of course, special emphasis should be put to overcoming poverty. Now, how this is going to be done and what this new development paradigm looks like is still very much open to discussion. Various working groups have been formed both inside the UN and among the member states, and various expert panels have put forward reports. The Secretary General of the United Nations himself will put forward a major report in September of this year to the member states, and hopefully this report will then inform the intergovernmental process. There have been proposals already from experts, advisory groups, about what should be included in the considerations for such a new development paradigm. And many of the reports, or several of the reports that have already been put forward, propose again goals, numeric goals, targets, indicators, so that progress could actually be measured as to whether the international community moves towards the attainment of these goals or not. And energy has been mentioned as one of the areas where goals and targets, numeric targets, should be formulated. And basically, it's the three objectives of sustainable energy for all, which means access to energy for all people, access to modern energy services for all people on the earth. It means drastically increasing the percentage of renewable energy in the overall energy mix and drastically increasing energy efficiency. There are proponents also in this informal discussion now who say that we should also have a target on phasing out energy subsidies that actually go against the overarching goals of sustainable development. So this is where the discussion stands at this point for the post 2015 development paradigm. It is expected that the intergovernmental discussions on this come to a conclusion in the year 2015, and at this point it's not a given that the intergovernmental agreement reached will include specific goals, targets, and indicators. But I think the energy community, and we are all part of this wider energy community, has every interest to keep energy considerations on the table and to see energy goals included, if at all there are goals. With that, I think I come to the conclusion of my little talk. If there is still time, and if the technology allows, again I'm open for questions. If not, I will I will make available a paper on these topics that that I've written in some other context, and that I'd be happy to share with you all. Thanks very much for engaging in this experiment here, and over to you, Jason.
Ambassador, absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for your comments this evening. I do have a question, and that is, do you think that there will be some sort of goals or targets set more concretely for energy moving forward? And if you do, do you have any idea what they might be?
What the goals might be? Well, the goals could be, I think the goals will be around the three objectives of sustainable energy for all. So it could, for example, be the targets could, for example, in the access area could be simply, you know, percentages of people connected to the grid, or percentages of people who have access to off-grid electricity, or percentages of the population who have modern cooking fuels. I mean, I think these are obviously very, very simple targets to monitor and to measure. On energy efficiency, there could be targets that are formulated in various high opportunity areas. Let's say, for example, in the building sector. There could be an improvement of energy efficiency aimed at a certain percentage point. Or an individual city could set a target to improve its energy efficiency. Industries could do that. So, you know, targets like that could actually be monitored relatively easy, and at the same time demonstrate a clear progress. Renewable energy also, you can obviously, each country has already now knowledge of its overall energy mix, and to increase the share of renewables in this energy mix is something that that can be monitored.
Thank you, Ambassador. If I could ask you, you would indulge me for one more question to follow up with. I've been reading a lot about China's biogas system and how it's deploying biogas to the rural communities in China. Have you been following that at all? Has it really been as successful as I've read? I've read 40 million homes, 120 million people being supplied with energy services through biogas. Is that really working that well?
Well, I think it is working. I think it is working. I'm not an expert on biogas. I'm not an expert on biogas in China, but. But I think, by and large, it is working quite well. And it needs to be said that China is making tremendous efforts to increase both energy efficiency and increase its share of renewables in the overall energy mix. Of course, the 75% of China's electricity still come from coal-powered plants. So, I mean, you know, there's a long way to go, and energy demand increases dramatically still in China every year. So whatever energy is available basically is being used. But when you look, for example, at the statistics of REN 21, the Renewable Energy Network 21, which puts out a global status report on renewables every year, if you look at the statistics in that report, you know, China basically is at the front, is the front runner in practically all the categories of new installed capacity in renewable energy, new installed capacity in hydropower, solar, thermal, photovoltaic, wind. You know, terrific investments are being done. And biofuel is one area where where the agricultural waste and waste issues in general, which are also a big issue in China, can be actually solved in ways that are conducive to also addressing the energy demand.
Ambassador, thank you. Thank you so much. We have a question from one of our students, Richard Hall. He asks, Ambassador, do you consider nuclear power to be something that could be useful in the future world energy mix, particularly in light of Fukushima?
Well, as a member of the Austrian Foreign Service, you know, we have, as Austria, we have a very strong national position that we believe that nuclear power is not a sustainable form of energy. The problems connected with safety of nuclear installations, the problems connected with nuclear proliferation, the problems connected with the disposal of used fuel, nuclear fuel, are simply not solved. So we feel that this is a technology that is very, very hazardous, and we don't consider it as a sustainable solution. When you look at projections of overall demand and overall supply of energy, nuclear tends to be a very small percentage at the global scale. Coal, oil, gas are far, far more important than nuclear in all scenarios of the International Energy Agency or other international entities. So nuclear will certainly continue to be around, and governments may choose it, will choose it for addressing certain energy situations, particularly if there is high demand in city areas, etc., industrial areas. But I don't think it's a solution. It's a solution to the issues of energy and sustainable development that we have discussed.
Thank you. That's a very interesting and comprehensive answer. You know, I think, Ambassador, that we are on about a 20-minute per call limit to China from Tulsa. Thinking about what's happened, we've had it cut off every 20 minutes, and I've checked the phone. We're at minute 17, so.
Okay, so we better stop.
I want to thank you. I can't thank you enough for your kindness in giving us these thoughts to consider, and this new and fresh and broad perspective that we really opens our eyes to things. The folks in the program are working on their thesis. And the ideas that you've given us tonight really, I think, are going to help them broaden and deepen what it is that they're working on. We owe you a great debt. Thank you.
Well, it was my pleasure.
Thanks. Well, with that, I think we'll sign off from Tulsa and wish you a good morning in China.
Thanks very much. I'm going to have a nice coffee now. You take care.
You too.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.